Welcome to Restore, a podcast seeking to restore the vision, restore the mission, restore the church. And now your host, Javier Diaz.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Restore Podcast, Episode 8. I am Javier, your host. I always love to start the podcast, or almost always love to start the podcast, by thanking those who have been listening and sharing our Restore Podcast. So thank you. Thank you so much. You know, it is our desire to help restore the vision, restore the mission, restore the church, so that we can be a people of God that are on the mission that Jesus has given us. Before getting into the content of today's episode, I just want to remind you again that registration is open for our Restore Conference that will take place on January 30 and 31 of 2017. And two of our confirmed keynote speakers will be Ed Stetzer and Michael Frost. Wow, I cannot wait. And I just want to encourage you, of course, to go to restorethemission.com, restorethemission.com, and register. There's information there about hotels. The conference will be held here where we are located, our headquarters in Orlando, Florida. And so we will also, aside from our two keynote speakers, have several pastors that will be talking about their journey in restoring the mission in their particular context. So with that said, I'm so excited to share with you today's episode. So much has been and continues to be said and written about reaching millennials. And on today's show, I talk with four pastors in different areas of our country that are actively engaged in reaching millennials. And even though they introduced themselves, I just want to preempt that by telling you who they are. Dr. Alan Martin, he's the pastor of the Younger Generation Church, which is the vibrant young adult ministry of the Arlington Seventh-day Adventist Church. We also have with us Pastor Ben Lundquist. He's the young adult director for the Oregon Conference and the young adult coordinator for the North American Division of Seventh-day Adventist. We also have Pastor Alex Voigt. He's the associate pastor for the Port Charlotte, Florida, Adventist Church, and he has been doing an amazing job, reaching and empowering young adults. And lastly, he's been on our show before. He was in the previous episode to this one, Pastor Morris Thompson. We thought that because he is so engaged in reaching young adults in Miami, we wanted to invite him back. And so we're glad that he was part of that conversation or this conversation as well. First, I want to tell you, we had a great, great time recording and talking about millennials and how to engage them. We spoke about worship services for millennials, mentoring, and just how they think and ways that we can better, of course, reach them. And we also had some fun during this conversation, so you will clearly notice that as you listen. I truly hope that you will make the time to listen, as I believe that what was shared by these four pastors that are actively engaged in reaching millennials can help others in their journey and their efforts to do the same. We mentioned a new book that has come out about this same topic and several other links, and those will be shared in the show notes. So get ready for this fun yet engaging conversation about reaching millennials. Here we go.
I am so glad to have each and every person on this episode 8 of our Restore podcast focusing on reaching millennials. And I thought we would get a little bit of a diversity of the people that we would have on the show to talk about this utmost important topic. And so I am so glad to have my wonderful friends and colleagues on. And I'm going to allow them to introduce themselves. And so I say there are two guys that are a little bit past the millennial age, and we'll talk about that in a moment, working hard to reach that, you know, generation. And then we also have two millennial pastors that are working on that as well. And so let me start with you, Alex, and then we'll work our way across at least my screen here that I'm looking at. So let's start with you. Alex is Alex, but tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're at and what you're doing.
Yeah, my name's Alex Voigt. I'm a pastor in Southwest Florida, Port Charlotte to be exact. I am an associate functioning in an associate role, but I've really taken on young adults as a prime focus. And I love working with my young adults. From when I arrived there, we had maybe one or two coming to church on the Sabbath, and we started a very intentional young adult program. We've had upwards of 40. And I'm also actually currently working on my Doctor of Ministry in Millennial Church. So I'm excited to be here today.
Awesome, man. Thank you for being here. My friend Lawrence. Oh, okay, Alan, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Alan.
No worries. Hello. My name is Alan Martin. I'm the teaching pastor here at Younger Generation Church in Arlington, Texas. We're part of the ministry of the Arlington Seventh-day Adventist Church, and I'm delighted to be with you. Been here about 6 years. Previous to that, I was teaching at the Seventh-day Adventist Theological Seminary in lovely Berrien Springs, Michigan.
Alan, we are so thankful to have you, and I'm a little biased because some of you may know that Dr. Alan Martin was one of my professors while I was at the seminary as well. So with that, we'll go with Ben.
Hey, I want to say hello to everybody on the podcast. My name is Benjamin Lundquist, and I want to give you a shout-out from the great Pacific Northwest.
Yes.
Just joined the Oregon Conference about 3.5 months ago, and I'm starting a young adult ministry for the Oregon Conference from scratch. And prior to coming to Oregon, spent about 4 to 5 years at the conference in Arizona leading out a young adult ministry. And just a pleasure to support pastors and leaders trying to love young adults better. And in addition to serving now in Oregon, I'm also one of the coordinators for the Young Adult Life Initiative with the North American Division, and trying to get to support leaders and resourcing so we can love millennials a whole lot better.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you, Ben. And also Morris. Morris was on our previous episode when we spoke with the staff of the Miami Temple Church. And of course, as one of our active, hardworking young pastors that is out there doing God's work, I definitely wanted to have him back for this particular podcast with this particular topic. So, Morris, thank you for coming back. But go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself, just in case those who have not heard the previous podcast can get to know you a little bit.
Well, thank you, Javier. Good to be back. And my name is Morris Thompson. I'm the associate pastor of Miami Temple Church. I'm the associate pastor, but my responsibilities are mainly discipleship, dealing more with small groups, and trying to create a culture of community within our church. I'm from the Washington, D.C. area. I grew up, I was actually an atheist before I became a Christian, and so and working with millennials and hard to reach people, I feel at home, So that's a bit of my background.
All right. Well, thank you again, Morris, for being with us. And I'm going to get right into it. And I want to ask you guys, let's just start off with a basic question so that we're all on the same page. And, I'm going to start with the person doing his doctorate on millennials, Pastor Alex Voigt. And if you can just lead us and tell us, who are millennials? What is the age bracket, and why has there been and continues to be so much talk about them? Some people have said that they are the most studied generation in history. And so, since you're right in the thick of it studying this, let's start with you, Alex.
Yeah, millennials. It's kind of a tricky term. There's kind of a consensus. It's somewhere in the ages of 18 to 32. That's one of the bigger range numbers that I've heard. It varies a little bit, but it is the largest generation that's alive today. It's currently 25% of the population. It's also the largest generation in the workforce. And for those reasons, that's enough reason right there, because of the size and because of the importance in the workforce today that millennials are being studied so much.
Okay. The thing you have to understand about millennials is that they're in really kind of the crest of adult life. So they're emerging and they're entering into adulthood, mm-hmm. but also, like Alex was mentioning here, they are a significant component of our workforce. And I love Benjamin's radio voice when he says, oftentimes, this is the largest generation in the history of the world. And quite honestly, just purely with the fact that there's so many of them, is just makes for such fascinating research. And so I'd say many of the millennials are hitting that sway of the 20-somethings and will be fascinated as we watch this cohort of young adults becoming adults over the next several years, if not over the next couple of decades.
And just to jump in, I think the just to add on to what Alex and Alan had said, not only is the generation the largest, but I think it's the most networked generation of this size to really ever be in existence. It's not only are they studied because of their sheer size, but I think the amount of networking that they have available to them is another point that really encourages a lot of study of this generation. And it also gives, with the size of networking, a huge platform for influence. And I think you see, marketing agencies jumping all over millennials because they know with their networking, their size, and their platform that they really can sway culture just because of those components all coming together at one time.
Okay.
Just to add in too, I think one of the things that millennials, which I've noticed about them, thrive on is community. And anything that has community and them bringing them together, they're going for that. And I can always tell a millennial in my church when they start asking, where are the small groups? Or what are we doing after church? Or, you know, they're constantly looking for an avenue of community. And so even outside the church setting, they're looking for a community, a place where they can feel it, where they can belong, they can connect with one another.
Okay, great. So we have a little bit of information there, which I appreciate, about their age and where they're at. Often what I have heard, you know, as I travel and, you know, actually listen to different people and we talk about, you know, millennials, we sometimes hear this, and I want you guys to kind of respond to it. So this is not my opinion, by the way, just to, you know, clarify. But we hear millennials are lazy. They don't commit. They don't stay in any place, even in the workforce. I have read, I don't know how many articles about that, right? Because they want something else. And so for those who may already be thinking, why is there a podcast, another podcast about millennials, about reaching them? And I know that many that listen to this particular podcast are, you know, not all, but, you know, many are from our community of faith as Seventh-day Adventists. And some in the older generation that are not millennials, even Generation X. I mean, we even have, right, what is it? Survivor is about to have Generation X versus millennials, right? For those who watch Survivor, and I watch Survivor when I can, or if not, I DVR it. But, okay, there it is. So here you have, right, you're pinning two generations against each other. I'm not too much, I know it's just all fun and games, but my question is there. So how do we respond to people that have that ideology? And some even said, listen, even those that don't have that opinion say, well, they may be a little bit of that, but we're all like that in some sort. So what are your thoughts? Whoever wants to chime in first.
You know, I have this great quote that was given to me by Dr. Steve Case back in the days when he was mentoring me. And I want you to just try and place this quote and let me know who you think it comes from. It goes like this, quote, "Our youth now love luxury. They have bad manners, contempt for authority, disrespect for older people. Children nowadays are tyrants. They no longer rise when their elders enter the room. They contradict their parents, chattering before company, gobbling their food, and tyrannize their teachers," unquote. Have any idea where that quote came from? That comes from Plato's Republic about 2,300 years ago. The reality that we are saying about this has been always the tension between older generations and the generation coming up. Yeah. We all go through the developmental stage, and because of the proliferation of social media and the ability to be on media, we can say these things about the generations that are coming up, but quite honestly, we can all point to the generation behind us and point out these characteristics. If anything, I would say about millennials is that it's very difficult to say anything about them because, quite honestly, now that we've become that global village that we've always been talking about, they are not only the largest generation in the history of the world, but they are the most diverse. So to say one thing about them stereotypically, which we've loved to do, we've been doing for decades now with our demographic studies, is very, very difficult. Our young adults nowadays, you can get some generalities, and I think that makes it kind of fun. But I would be very cautious to label them lazy, because I've seen generations previous to them that have accomplished far less in the amount of time that they've been on the platform and under the spotlight.
Sure.
Yeah, and just to add on to that, I agree with you. Labels, the very label millennials. I'm a millennial, and we don't like to hear that. It's not us. And if there is one thing that I think we seek, and I don't think it's because we were a product of you know, the older generations, but maybe it's because of culture, maybe it's because of media today. Authenticity is one of the largest things, and you can, young adults, whether it's millennials, whether it's even beyond millennials, they can snuff out fraud. They can snuff out, you know, someone standing up and preaching at them they can figure these things out. And I think that's one of the big differences today. It seems like a lot of the older generations, you could do something and you could keep it going even if it wasn't what you believed, even if it wasn't what you felt, even if there was something deep down inside that there was a identity crisis that you were hiding. But our generation does not do that. And the statistics, like you said, it shows that they won't stay in a job for very long. And I don't think that has to do with them being lazy. I don't think it has to do with them doing so poorly in their job performance as much as them recognizing that that's not who they are, and they need to bring their life into conformity with who they feel they are.
Right. And I appreciate that. It's good because it's good coming from a millennial to be able to describe that. I just heard in a recent podcast, it was about millennials, and they're marrying 5 years later, according to this one individual. They're leaving their parents' house 5 years later. They're staying home longer. And within that same aspect, what was your thoughts, you know, Ben, and then we'll go to Morris and another millennial so he can respond as well.
Yeah, you know, I think they're pulling, you know, from what both Alex and Alan said, I think there can be a temptation for us to lump leaders in their 20s, and I'm just going to call them young leaders because that's what they are, you know, and I think I use the term young leader a lot more than I do millennial, because I think we're coming alongside gifted, networked, amazing leaders that are just in the life stage that they're in. But I think there's a temptation to, because we have so much research about millennials, to clump every millennial or young adult that we meet into this category and say, well, I already understand you. I've got you figured out. And, we do know some things about millennials. We know they've got worldwide access to technology like no other generation in history. They have always lived with the reality of terrorism. They've got doubts with institutions. They're coming up in the age of a recession. They love the term YOLO, but many of us love YOLO. You only live once, but make it the most out of your life. But so I think to respond to that, I think it's important to remember, let's not fall into the trap of categorizing every millennial leader, and let's remember that every story is unique. And so I think, you know, part of us engaging millennials better is to recognize this is and to coin the phrase from David Kinnaman, they have a new mind. I mean, this is a new world that they are living in. They've got access to everything at the touch of a button. And even though we know a couple things about them as far as shared descriptions, everyone has a unique story. And so I think part of the engaging millennials better is sharing stories and really being able to sit down and understand what makes the heart of that young leader tick, what are their passions, hopes, and dreams, and how do we come alongside that?
I think you said something, just to kind of piggyback before I go back to you, Alan, and then we go to Morris. I like what you said, you know, Ben, and I think that's part here, and kind of expand on that aspect, is that we often lump maybe, because I think every generation has people that are lazy and don't work, or they leave the house later and things of that nature. And perhaps because of the statistics and the research, there's more of that within this one generation. But as you said, just because there is that, or there might be that, but everybody is not like that. And everybody has their own story. And it's about listening to those people's stories. So I just want to kind of piggyback and affirm that. Alan, you wanted to say something.
Oh, let's be careful too. We're not disavowing the research, because all of us utilize research and all of us value statistics and surveys to get a generalized idea of what this experience is for this next generation. I love the ways by which we look at it. Each generation has their own kind of milestone experiences. Mm-hmm. I just recently read a little bit that this is going to be the first generation, and some of the current young millennials, 9/11 is a historical fact for them. Hmm. So we have to understand there are some characteristics that shape this generation, and so surveys, statistics, research, demography, that's all helpful, but when it comes down to that, authenticity is not found in the statistics, the authenticity found in the story.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I agree with Alan and the rest of my colleagues on the podcast. Oftentimes we look at the research, and the research is good, but if we simply try to define millennials based off these labels and statistics and those sorts of things, and really don't understand the essence of who this generation is, it's gonna make it extremely difficult for us to reach them. And you know, oftentimes we want to throw these labels onto them, and then we'll say, okay, I'm going to connect with them this particular way, but we haven't really gotten to know them. And that's the thing. You said it, Alan. Millennials want authenticity. And for me personally, the best way to reach, one of the best ways to research about millennials from a layman's standpoint is to actually get to know a millennial, actually spend time with a millennial, actually listen to them. And from there, I think you can really understand who they are and what their biggest desires are.
And that's great. You know, some may argue, and perhaps have argued, the fact that maybe the millennials in their quest and their desire for authenticity have actually been a catalyst, in that some have believed that society in this day and age wants authenticity. They want it from, you know, this election year. They want it from their people they're going to vote for. We won't even go there, but nonetheless, we want it in their churches, more particular to our realm of what we're talking about, from the leaders here. And at least I have seen, and I'm going to go with that word authenticity, I have seen more and more Christian leaders, not necessarily young leaders, make an effort to have that authenticity, right? So we can't, as millennials don't want to be lumped all in one circle, as Ben said, we can't lump all the leaders that are not millennials that are, or church members of whatever denomination that don't want to engage. There are many who are trying to engage and trying to, you know what, maybe I could learn from their authenticity. Is that something that you guys have seen in that, you know, realm of authenticity? Anybody?
Yeah, you know, I had a podcast I was actually making where I'm interviewing different millennials each week, and I've kind of put it on a pause right now, just letting them tell their story. And some of my church members actually listened to it, some of my older church members. And in it, I talked about authenticity and about how, just in a very, I'm not going to give any examples of this, but in our lives, we seek equilibrium. I think it was James White in The Rise of the Nuns, where he points out the research where if we have conflicting values between our faith and who we are, we're going to, you know, the older generations could sit there and could balance that tension. The younger generations, we are not good at that. We would rather just drop one so we could have that equilibrium, and we can be living according to our values. And when I said that on one of my podcasts, one of my church members came to me and said, "So are you saying that we're inauthentic people, speaking to the older generations?" And I have to say that, you know, we're not saying by that we appreciate authenticity that the older generations are inauthentic. What it means is that just holding ourselves to a personal level of authenticity, that we need to live a life of equilibrium where we can be okay with the choices that we make and the beliefs that we hold and not feel compelled by expectations and what we are told we're supposed to believe. And so I think, you know, it's not us versus them mentality here.
Well, come on, let's be really honest. One of the things that's a turnoff to all of us is when people play church, okay? So we're talking to a predominantly Adventist audience here, but also a Christian church-going audience here with this podcast. And if you go to any particular situation and you're having to put on your best face and you're having to pretend and play like, you know, everything's nice when everything isn't nice, for certain generations, we've learned to tolerate that, or that's how we interact with each other. When someone says, "Happy Sabbath, how are you doing?" we don't dare tell them how we're really doing.
Right.
For this generation, one of the things that they've, you know, in the conversations and relationships I have, they'd rather have relationships where you, if you ask them how they're doing, they actually have permission to share how they're really doing. And so it's not so much that, that young adults are not interested in the church. It's just that they're not interested in being fake.
Okay.
Quite honestly, that's probably a characteristic that all of us as humans, regardless of generation, can really value. But there are certain generations previous to this millennial generation that have coped with a certain amount of playing church and playing loyal to my company, to which you know, the up and coming young leaders are not willing to tolerate.
Is that go with? And I think it was you, Ben, that mentioned that many millennials are not. Don't trust institutions, or and I've even spoken to some millennials, and they've told me, as I've spoken to them, you know, many millennials, but as I was speaking to this, you know, group, they mentioned about how they don't trust institutions, and my only reply was, when it comes to that particular aspect, right, and being authentic, is it that they don't trust institutions? Or is it that they don't trust what some institutions stand for? For example, some millennials will, you know, ponder again. We can go online and Google this. But yet, if they don't like institutions, I'd say throw away all of your Apple products, because that's a huge institution. If you don't like that, then don't go to some of the universities that some of them go to, because those are huge institutions. And so, is it so much about institutions, or is it about perhaps the authenticity and trustworthiness of certain institutions? What do you guys thought?
I think it is. I think it's about the authenticity and the message. So me, myself, I'm a millennial pastor, and outside of the Adventist Church, I've been volunteering for project management with the Red Cross and needs-based assessments. I'm a part of several different human rights organizations. I also donate my money to them. Now, why do I do that? Because those organizations live and breathe what they, their mission, their vision, and, you know, for, you know, I'll say it, for what they preach.
Mm-hmm.
And what we found in the Adventist Church with this generation is that our leadership, they haven't always been living everything that they've been preaching. And so millennials, who can pretty much spot out whether or not someone's authentic or not, they see that and they're like, well, I see the institution, I see the leadership model. I've heard people say we should do away with conferences and unions and this. Millennials won't relate to that. I don't think that's the issue. The issue is this. We need to be authentic with what we're preaching. So they're seeing the leadership and they're seeing a discrepancy between what they preach and the way they act. And so millennials are like, well, I'm not giving my money to the church. Because I don't see where they're living out what they're believing. Well, I'm not going to commit to helping this organization grow or this institution grow. I'm not committing to the message because I don't see the leadership living it out.
Yeah, and if I could jump right in to answer your question, I think that the you know, every institution has a human face, and that's the face of the leaders. And so when I think when you hear people talk about millennials, not having faith in institutions or organizations, I think often that's the personal interaction that they have had with a leader within that organization. And, you know, if you're going to just drop a leadership nugget, leaders create culture and leaders build the feel of that organization. And so I think there's a great calling for us as church leaders to say, you know, we want to be leaders that are authentic because God is calling us to be authentic. And what does that mean? We share a journey that's real, that has celebration moments, and it has struggles and mountaintops, and it's got valleys. And, you know, when we mess up, we own it. And we're willing to say, you know what, I dropped the ball on that. And I think, you know, following the leadership model of Jesus, I think really is the biggest motivation for us being more authentic. And I think as challenging as it can be for some millennials to connect with organizations, every organization has a face, and that's the leader. And I think it's also easy for us to begin to change that perception by being church leaders that are authentic followers of Jesus, you know, and living that out. And I love what you said, Morris, too. I met a lot of young adults, and they've got no issues with Jesus. They love Jesus. Yes. It's the disconnect between what I'm reading about in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John and what I may not be seeing lived out within my community, but we can change that, you know, and I think we can take those observations and those realities, and we can say, you know what, let's have some honest dialogue, and if we're going to talk and live as followers of Jesus, we want to be able to live that out within the community and make a real difference. So I think for me, I don't want to be insecure about that. I would want that observation to just challenge me to be a leader that's more authentic,
yes,
you know, especially with my interactions with this young adult generation.
Awesome.
Maybe this will be helpful to leaders, because I know leaders are listening right now. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean you have to emotionally vomit on your congregation or your colleagues. Starting off with building relationships with the people that are closest to you.
Correct.
As opposed to having your professional face and somehow have this secret covert thing called a personal life. There are places where we can walk together and give each other courage as leaders to move forward. And quite honestly, as Alex was mentioning earlier, the, you know, the BS meter of this millennial generation is very highly tuned. When we begin to be authentic, or let's use words that maybe we can relate to, being honest and real with the people that are closest to us, it gives us the vulnerabilities to which the millennial generation will be naturally attracted to potentially begin to build those relationships.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you guys so much for that. Really a lot to ponder and to continue to dialogue upon. I do want to shift just a little bit and kind of, Morris, a kind of segue into what you were talking about there, specifically to our community of faith. And I mean, there is an abundance of evidence that one might say to suggest that we as a faith community, as Seventh-day Adventist Christians, and perhaps others as well, I mean, there's, again, evidence as well online about that, that we're not doing well in reaching millennials. And we've kind of already attested to this group, why we're talking about it, why we're reaching them, the way they kind of think to a great, you know, actual degree. So why do you guys believe that we are or are not doing well in reaching millennials? And if we are not, how can we specifically improve? We've mentioned already a few points. Alan, you mentioned about just, I mean, we talked about authenticity and drawing close and getting, you know, to know them a bit more. But if we can be more specific, and I know that, you know, Alan, you've worked with Dr. Kenneman, and he has done great, you know, research specifically with our community of faith. So if you can kind of start talking to us a little bit about that, and then we'll go from there talking about, you know, why we believe we're not, or we are, maybe we've gotten better since the research came out in reaching millennials.
Hey, let's just be honest with each other. We kind of pin this on the millennials. We pin it on every young adult generation. But a great mentor and friend of mine, Dr. Jose Rojas, said this: we're not just losing young adults out of the Adventist Church. We're losing people of all ages out of the Adventist Church. Dr. Yes. David Trim out of the General Conference and the Office of Statistical Analysis and Analytics in regards to the secretariat aspects, the clerkship, if you will, of our membership. Young adults are not the only people that are starting to be missing from our church. They come from all generations. So I love this podcast because we're saying stuff like honesty and authenticity and being real and building relationship. When's the last time you went to an evangelistic series where they were talking about those type of things?
Yeah.
It's just not happening. We're not training our churches to build great relationships with people, to travel this journey called humanity with people around us. We got great facts. We got great doctors. Shoot, we could We could throw a party about prophecy if we wanted to. But when's the last time we did that Jesus thing, the mentor-like Jesus thing, where we partied with people, but we also grieved and mourned with people, and we also were there to be not only for the great successes, but also for the great failures. So I would say this, just as a general response to your question, Javier, is that we have great room to improve in regards to just being able and willing to build relationships.
Okay.
So it applies to millennials, but it also applies to baby boomers, and it also applies to Generation X and all of those generations in between and the ones that are coming up. We need to foster this idea that God is interested in a relationship with us. And yes, like Benjamin says, we love Jesus, but he said over and over again in the Synoptic Gospels, how do you share how much you love me? Build relationships, tend to my sheep, feed my lambs. And we may even take that very literally. If you want to improve your attractiveness to young adults, actually one of the ways you can do that is just to feed them. I have yet to find a college student that will turn me down when I offer free pizza. I love what Ben does. He orders hundreds of burritos at a sitting, and I have yet to see a group of young adults not kind of come in like a group of locusts and eat up those burritos. I think that's one of the most beautiful things is to say we can share food together and use those opportunities of meals together, a first century thing working in the 21st century, to build relationships with another generation and improve what we're doing as a church for millennials.
Let me kind of have just a little pushback for those who may be thinking this. So I've been to potlucks like many of you guys have from, at least in my realm, in my neck of the woods, from Tallahassee now all the way down to Miami, okay? You know, we have within our community of faith, we have the famous haystack, you know, and then we have potlucks that sometimes you wish you never went to, and things of that nature. We get it. Honesty, right? Authenticity. So sometimes you go to this, and I always observe it. Now I've really been able to see it in just in different realms. You have potluck, and you'll have young adults there. But they all, obviously, like we all do, we all kind of go to our own people, right? Wherever we are. Now, how do people get in to those cliques? I mean, I don't want to call them cliques, to their community. So how do you do that, maybe at the local level, for those that may be asking? Because it seems like if you're in that group, it's hard to get into that group because you're already in there. Am I making sense? In other words, if there's a table of 18, 20-year-olds, and there's a leader that's in his 40s or 50, or she, then how does that leader or that church member go and sit with a group of 20-year-olds that are talking about college and their prospective goals within that class or whatever it may be? Because I'm sure somebody's thinking, well, I've tried, but it's hard. So, Morris, what are your thoughts? or whoever wanted to, you know, speak. It's okay. Ben?
I can tell you from experience.
For those that aren't listening, this is what's going on. You want authenticity. So we're all looking, as you guys know, we're all looking at each other, and they're pointing. And I don't know, since our screens are different, they're pointing at different people, and it's like five different arrows. So whoever wanted to talk, just go for it. It's okay. Totally.
Yeah, I can tell you from experience.
Totally honest. Authentic. There you go. So.
Right. So in our young adult group, we have a whole bunch of young adults, and we have a few adults that are there with us because they're like young adults to us. We consider them young adults. One of them is an optometrist. His wife, she was a counselor, and they are wonderful people. Okay. They don't have a millennial child of their own yet, but they're here. They support us, honestly, financially. They bring food. They show up. They just talk. They're real. And honestly, we don't even think about them as being different. They are one of the group. So I don't even – is this being there, being supportive, being loving, and that's all you need to do.
So just what I'm hearing you say is that for those that may struggle, how do I connect with a millennial? Maybe the first thing is to actually just say, hey, would you like to come over for lunch?
Absolutely.
Simple. That's what I hear you saying.
Yeah, as simple as that, you know. I don't think there's really any complex formula to becoming friends with a millennial. I mean, how do you make friends with anybody? I mean, you're intentional. You connect. You desire to hear from them and listen to them and share your experiences with them.
All right.
You know, Ben said something earlier that's really, really key here, Javier.
Yes.
Is that we need to create these opportunities where we just listen. Adults don't even have to say anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just listen, ask open-ended questions, and genuinely be interested in their lives, because these millennials have fascinating lives. And so if you let them tell their story, all of a sudden you'll find these places where you connect. You may say, you know what, the Miami Dolphins have had nothing since Bob Greasy. You know what I'm saying? You'll have these places where you say, hey, we really enjoy the outdoors. This comes by the interchange, but one of the things that we as older generations, as leaders, can simply do is we can provide the living room, we can provide food, and we have wonderful church members that are willing to host potlucks. But the problem with potluck is that we're all in it for the food. We're not in it for the relationship.
Hmm.
And adults, especially our adult leaders, need to create culture where we're here, but we're not here for the food. We're here for the stories. And if we afford them that opportunity, you'll be amazed at the places where it really doesn't matter whether you're 20 or 40 or 80, we have stories to tell and share with one another.
And I love that. I just want to say, I love that. I love what you just finished saying before I go back to you, Ben. I love what you just said there, that it's just, and you guys are all saying it. And I asked the question, obviously, because there are people, I believe, that are thinking, you know, how am I going to connect? How am I going to connect? And not just at a potluck or anywhere. But I like what you said, that we all have a story, regardless if we're millennials or whatever generation we are. And I think we it seems by what I'm hearing you guys say, and is that we need to be listening intentionally more to those stories that people want to tell. Ben.
Yeah, I was just going to say the content is so great from what's being shared. And going back to your question, I think two things that are big roadblocks with reaching millennials effectively. One, I think, is just fear. I think we have generations that are just afraid that they're not going to be relevant, that they're going to say something they shouldn't say, or they don't have anything to offer a younger generation. So I think fear is one. I think we also have leaders that are really looking for the program or strategy versus starting with the relationship. And Alan was saying it, as well as Morris and Alex. I believe that, you know, if you're a pastor listening to this podcast and you want to build a young adult culture within your church, then you need to be able to speak from the pulpit, from the life that you are doing with young adults. And so versus getting up and saying, hey, our strategy for 2017, and I hope leaders are hearing me correctly, strategy is really important. I mean, there is a time for strategy and you know, getting programs put together. But the best strategies are built off relationships. And so I think for a pastor to get up and say, let me tell you about the meeting I had at Taco Bell with one of my mentees this week. Man, God did amazing things, and he taught me something that I never knew before. I can now send emails with my iPhone. And so, but I think, you know, being able to say you want to reach millennials effectively, let's engage relationally with those folks. And I love, Alan, your point about ask open-ended questions, share stories. I'll give you a couple of great examples. Those kind of conversations, it works beautiful on mission projects. Maranatha projects are always cross-generational. We had a bunch of folks that were helping us out at the Big Lake Summer Camp. There's 114 young adults there all summer. Many of the volunteers are much more seasoned. They all eat together. They work together. They build cabins together. And I've just seen some great examples of even taking a potluck and saying, we want this to be intentionally cross-generational. So the goal of the potluck is for you as a millennial to sit across a table from a seasoned leader, and you've got a card with five life questions we just want you to process together.
Hmm.
And so being able to say, let's take the gatherings often that we do anyway, and let's be more intentional about building those relationships with stuff that's already happening And Morris, you mentioned small groups. Relationships happen in small groups,
yes.
And there's authenticity. Alex, why do people love coffee shops? Because stories are shared at coffee shops, and honest dialogue happens at coffee shops. And so I just think as a leader, let's remember that reaching millennials better starts with us. And my challenge, which I gave to 400 pastors at Pacific Union a couple of weeks ago, I said, let me just challenge you. Who are you investing your life in every week that's a millennial? And if you don't have somebody in your life, begin that prayer journey and let that cultural change start with you.
You know, I just want to have a quick testify. You inspired me, Ben. You know that Tony Robbins voice just inspires me. That I'm about to cry right now or something. But anyways, everybody's laughing on this podcast right now.
When they get digital tissue.
But I mentioned earlier before we got started, as we were talking a bit. Morris and I have had an ongoing mentoring relationship, and I spoke at his church a while back, just about a month ago, and he said some nice things. But the reality is that I've learned a lot by sitting down and listening to Morris. And he may or may not know fully what I've learned, but I've learned a lot by just sitting and listening to him, as much as hopefully he's learned something in the conversations that we have had. But that is just to give a short, I don't really do this on this podcast, but I just wanted to mention that. Alan.
Here's where the research helps us. In David Kinman's research, especially in the You Lost Me book, as well as the follow-up that we did with the North American Division, mm-hmm. It's sharing with us that these intergenerational relationships are really key and different from previous generations. And this is going to help with the fear factor we've been talking about here, to help our adults. Previous generations that experienced and wanted to keep a generation gap, the millennials have shared unanimously, overemphasized that they want to have relationships with older generations. And the part that you're talking about here, Javier, is very important. These relationships are not one way. They are a two-way street where we're seeing what David Kinman calls reverse mentoring also happen. Young adults are learning wonderful things from older generations and from the wisdom thereof, but also millennials who live and breathe in our current technological post-postmodern era, they are teaching us wonderful things as older generations. And as a result of this, I love what Dr. Tim Elmore says. Hmm. We need to build relationship bridges that can bear the weight of truth. When we start off with these relationships, let's start off maybe with areas of kindred interest or stories that we share. We build enough vulnerability with one another and bonding with one another. Then we can get to the hard stuff. Then we can get to the discipleship. But until we have those relationships, it's basically potluck. One more comment I will share with you because I think it's really important. It hits on what Pastor Morris is doing such a great job there with Miami Temple, is that when we call it cliques, we think negatively, right? Mm. Then we call it small groups, and then it's positive. the idea here is don't break up your cliques. Allow your cliques to form strong relationships because that's what makes church so much fun. I get to see my friends. But make it, as a leader, make it a part of your culture that your circle of friends needs to continue to grow, needs to have a mission-mindedness. So a Sabbath school that's been with each other for decades can make it part of their responsibility to say, we're so tight-knit, but let us be like that optometrist that Alex was talking about. Let's sponsor and use our living room or use the patio deck and invite a dozen or six or three young adults over to enjoy the food that we've always enjoyed and utilize these groups that are using life together as a means by which to include other people into the fold.
And something I'd also challenge all our listeners, we talk about building relationships with millennials, but oftentimes when we as pastors and church members talk, it's within the context of the millennials within our church. And I challenge all leaders, all pastors, why not build a strong mentoring relationship or a strong relationship with someone outside of the church walls? Yeah. Something that I do at my church. I moved to Miami. I didn't know anybody down here. My wife and I don't know anybody. Nearly all of our friends don't belong to the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And they're Muslims, they're Buddhists, they have Jewish friends, they're agnostics. And these are people I do life with. You know, and I've gone as far as to bring these people to my church and have them on stage and talk about their experience.
Hmm.
And just so that my church members can see, look, this is what an actual millennial looks like and believes, you know, and this is what relationships look like. Just building that strong bond, and they appreciate it. You know, we're talking about reaching millennials. If you have no millennial friends, how are you going to know how to really reach them? And the research is important. You know, I love what Ben said. You know, we focus a lot on strategy, and strategy is good, but how many millennials do you actually conversate with so you really get to know who they are and really get to the heart of, you know, basically, yeah, who they are and what they desire?
So use the research to help create a diminished fear factor, okay?
Yes.
But for the adults, but then give your adults, give your church members the assignment to take that beyond the research and say, hey, you know what? It's not going to cost you but an overpriced cup of coffee at Starbucks or your local coffee house, and sit down to listen to a story of any millennial that you meet, and you will be fascinated by what you can learn, and they will be appreciative of getting to know you, which they desperately want to know, these older generations, which I found the statistics and the research to be helpful to bridge that generational gap that we've seen in the past.
You know, there's along with that, you know, research, there's a new book that's, it comes out today. It's called Growing Young, 6 Essential Strategies to Help Young People Discover and Love Your Church. Authors Kara Powell, Jake Mulder, and Brad, you know, Griffin, they wrote the book. And it's interesting because it kind of goes, I just bought the book, or I'm just going to buy the book, I should say, and I'm going to read it. It just came out today. And in this review, it said, so many churches pour money and energy into flashy worship services meant to make teenagers and young adults think that, you know, church is cool. And I'm actually quoting here. But it turns out cool isn't what young people want. Forget the rock band vibe and the flashing lights. And it says here, warm is the new cool. And so they said, for our book, Growing Young, we researched more than 250 congregations. When we spoke to more than 1,300 young churchgoers, ages 15 to 29, mm-hmm. they told us what they want, authenticity and connection. So, I mean, we've been talking about that. We've been talking about, that's exactly, without even mentioning the book, and I hope you guys will go out and, you know, check it out, those that, you know, are actually listening. We've been talking about authenticity, connecting with, you know, young adults, with millennials. How does that look like specifically in our worship gatherings? We talk about it in our daily interactions. Some people say, exactly as was mentioned here, well, your worship services, we need to change this, change that. I think I'm asking the right people here. I mean, there's a vast, just 4 of you guys have so much, you know, knowledge on this. 2 of you are actively young adults and pastors, and as you are as well, Alan, and you have a whole service called Younger Generation. But all generations are welcomed. And Ben, you travel all over the place and you look at different worship services. So there's a pastor, leaders listening, and they're saying, okay, we get the authenticity and the connections. Worship services, the very controversial, let's talk about our worship services and the information that also Barna has put out there. Do things need to actually change in certain services? According to some research, millennials, they enjoy all kinds of different worship services. Worship services that look like younger generation and worship services that perhaps don't look like, you know, that actually don't look like that. So what are you guys' thoughts on that? And I know we're walking on a line now, right? Uh-oh, now we're touching a little red button. But, hey, that's what we are here to do, is to get people thinking and talking about this. So what are your thoughts? Let's start with Alan, because, come on, he's got younger generation. So we got to start with you on that one.
Hey, this is what I'll share with you. We're here in the Metroplex between Dallas and Fort Worth. Younger Generation Church is a great and vibrant young adult ministry that's a part of our worship and our ministry here at the Arlington Seventh-day Adventist Church. And we actually have young adults that are responsible for one of our 3 services the 10-15 service. So just definitely a little infomercial here. Check us out at ygchurch.com. We'd be delighted for you to join your worship with us because we broadcast it every single weekend. This is what I would...
Now, I'm going to ask you one more question. Because you had that great commercial, and that's awesome, I want to ask you, when you answer that question, it'd be great to perhaps, I just want to add that here on the cuff, how obviously you have your second service is the younger generation service. How many young adults, some may perhaps ponder and wonder, don't go to that service but may go to the first service or may go to the third service?
I want to make sure that we begin to burst this bubble because we have this fixation on the worship service or the worship program.
Yeah.
And what we're trying to do with Younger Generation Church, although granted back in 2004 when it first started about a decade, 12 years ago, it was specifically contoured as a contemporary worship service. But we've since changed it because we've had to have a larger mission than just being a worship service by young adults for young adults. So we're really utilizing Younger Generation Church as an opportunity for leadership development, an opportunity for mentoring and discipling. And we no longer say that Younger Generation Church is a worship service by young adults for young adults. Younger Generation Church is us fostering and deepening the devotion of a generation of young adults to serve the church, the entire church. Not only the church that meets in our four walls, but our vision is to go beyond, to overflow beyond our four walls to bless our community and transform our world. So we have young adults literally around the world serving in Hong Kong. We sent off a young adult to serve in South Korea, but we still want them to be a vibrant part of the church. So what I would share with you, just to kind of answer your question here in regards to worship service, absolutely, Javier, we have young adults involved very intensely in our second service of our three services. We have a legacy service at 9 o'clock, Younger Generation Church at 10:15, and Mosaic service at 11:30. But in all of these services, there are young adults and even younger than young adults and millennials involved because we believe in intergenerational relationships and intergenerational worship is important. So don't be fooled that you think, oh, well, it's Younger Generation Church, so if I'm over 20, they're going to card me at the door. We have from 19 years old to 90 that are worshiping where our young adults are taking the primary lead. But our young adults are involved in all three of our services. But Younger Generation Church at 10:15 offers us that apprentice platform, if you will, for young adults to feel like, hey, I can express authentically my spirituality, my journey with Jesus in the contours of this service where I am apprenticing leading the church through this particular worship service. So we're really excited about that, but I do want to make sure that we understand this. The most diverse generation in the history of the world, I have many of our young adults that would prefer a more hymn-based, a more liturgy-based service, so they don't attend the 10:15 service. And we have other young adults that are probably much like Morris and Alex that have moved into the young parenthood stage, and they love the idea of their children being involved in the service. And these are all expressions of this wonderful mosaic of millennials that are part of our service and finding the contours where they're building relationships, and we want to encourage that. So I do want to make sure that we don't get back into the worship wars that we saw in the 70s and the 80s.
Yes.
Because individuals said, oh, well, if we do it this way, then they will like it. You look on any one of your young adults' iPods or phones, I would dare gamble, if I wasn't an Adventist minister, that none of your millennials have only one genre of music
for sure
on their phone, okay? And if they do, it's because they deleted the other ones because the pastor was going to look on their iPad or on their phone to see what type of music they're listening to. Likewise, we can't pigeonhole it and say, hey, only one type of worship experience is what this large generation, this diverse generation, is yearning for.
Well, I appreciate that, and that's why we pose the question here, because this is what some leaders, pastors, and I'm, you know, maybe nobody, maybe there's, but I believe there's some thinking, well, younger generation, they've gone online perhaps, and I'm specifically speaking to our community of faith, that when they look at younger generation, whether on Facebook or whatever, and they say, oh, look at that, And so I really wanted to give you the platform, you know, and give the platform not only to you, but to all, to really express that, that it's not just about a type of worship service, because it's so varied in how people, as you mentioned, people have different genres that people pick from. And so let's talk to Alex. Alex is waiting to jump in here, and everybody wants Alex to speak. By the way, if you guys could only see this, that we're talking about authenticity, right? So let's just be authentic here. Alex has got this wonderful mic, really, really, really cool mic that he, I guess, records his podcast from. And he's got something, he's got like something on it, but it looks like that not should be on it. So I'm just going to leave it at that. Everybody's saying, I can't believe he's mentioning that, but hey, we're just, you know.
It's actually one of my wife's socks, so that makes you feel better. Okay. Yeah. No, but, I was laughing because Ben's going crazy over there. Anyways, no, I wanted to second what Alan said. That's very true. And when it comes to worship styles and things, are they important? Absolutely. And it's not for the reason that we think. I've seen it happen so many times where we want to go and launch a church that's going to reach young people, whether it's, you know, whether this happened in the past for younger generations or for millennials. And what invariably happens is they take a standard church service, they take the offering call, they take everything, they throw jeans on everybody, they bring drums in, they turn the lights different colors and turn it down, and we expect that to be that's going to be the big draw. And like you said, you know, obviously that does reach a certain group. I think a lot more actually of the Generation Y is even more attracted to that. But I think that we miss the ball when we think that that is the end all of it. The most important thing about these different worship styles is the attitudes. A young person wants to come to a place where they see that people are open enough to be able to do these things. That is absolutely essential. But also that they're not so closed-minded that this is the only way of doing things. So just like Alan said, you know, offering differing ways of having church, it's the attitude of open-mindedness that I think is far more important than being the flashiest.
Well said, well said. And I think it's that.
I was going to jump in here.
Yeah, it was back to that mosaic that Alan was talking about, having different ways of people expressing their relationship with Jesus. Ben.
Yeah, I think just four things that I'm going to share. I think I come from the perspective of more floating around to churches and maybe young adult retreats and different gatherings. And I fully agree. I think if we're looking for a one-stop shop or a package church experience, that's not the reality, because people, they experience it in a different way. But I think there are maybe four principles I'll share real quick that I think are universal when it comes to creating a church experience that would appeal to millennials, but really appeal to everybody. And I love that we interact with a lot of leaders that come out of younger generation church, some of the worship leaders, and I think they really appreciate the cross-generational makeup of that church community. And I think that's one of its strongest points when I've talked to some of the leaders. But, you know, four principles real quick. I think worship services and church experiences that are the most effective are ones that are extremely intentional. And what I mean by that, I love when you mentioned the author's book, that do you intentionally create an environment that feels like a family from when somebody rolls into the parking lot to when they leave potluck? Have they felt like they've been welcomed into a family? And so I think intentional at every twist and turn of that service. I also think that we have a generation that has access to so much that we have to do things with a standard of excellence. It's got to be done well. And I think there are some worship services that turn off millennials and, frankly, people. And it's not about the style, but the quality is so poor in what has been doing that people immediately roadblock. And if it was done well, they'd probably be a lot more open to that experience. So I think very intentional, high standard of excellence with our worship and church experience. And I think making sure that we put emphasis into creating a intergenerational church experience, I think, is really important. I read a great quote earlier in the week, and it said, one of the biggest challenges with
high school students leaving youth ministries and moving into adulthood is all they have known is youth ministry. And we expect them to leave a youth ministry and automatically be assimilated into an intergenerational church experience, and they've never been part of that, and they don't know how to do it. Hmm. And it's foreign to them.
Or worse, they move from being actively involved in their youth group, graduate from youth group, and they enter into our adult services where adults are white knuckle holding on to leadership. And the basic message we say to these next generations is that until you have babies, sit down, shut up, and color.
Yep.
The same message we sent to them as little kids. Hmm. And so part of the real thing that I want to hear the rest here, because I'm taking notes. Anything that Ben says, I need to take notes, especially when you have a four-pointer here. But the idea here that's really key for us is if we don't begin while they're still young, in their teen years and in their preteen years, by the time they're adults, they've gotten the message. Hmm. They've gotten the message. And so that's why Adventist churches aren't doing well. We told them, hey, stay in your hello, stay in your little basement room and do the little things that young adults or youth do. And when you get older, we really don't want to hear about you until you bring little sissy or your little baby junior over into our crater role in our Sabbath schools. And we need to rethink the way that we send these messages off. Sorry, man.
And to take it even further, we teach them to clap and dance in Sabbath school, and then we bring them in, and then they have to stop there too.
When their heart really wants to clap and dance.
and talking about the worship service, I mean, music and, you know, the style of the worship service, all fine and good, but does your church have community? And I find that oftentimes pastors try to use a worship service to generate a culture of community, and it just doesn't work. If your church doesn't have community outside the walls, if people aren't meeting in homes, if people aren't meeting within groups and forming strong bonds, there's no authentic spirituality in your worship service, because when they meet once a week to worship, they don't really know each other.
Yeah.
And so they're going to go there. They may listen to music if they go, and they'll hear the sermon, but that's it. Then they leave. Hmm. And I find that oftentimes, you know, spiritual growth doesn't happen solely by yourself. I tell my church members all the time, you need to be a part of a group to grow spiritually. If you're not part of a group, you're not going to grow spiritually, period. Mm. So oftentimes we have members who aren't a part of groups. They don't have real connections with people in church or, you know, spiritual people, you know, in general. And so they're not growing spiritually. They come to the worship service, they hear the sermon, and they may come for a few weeks, but then they soon start to leave, and they say, well, Pastor, I'm not getting anything out of the worship service. Yeah. I'm not growing spiritually from coming to church. So what's the point? It's because they're not growing spiritually within community. So if your church doesn't have a strong foundation, a strong culture of community in the church, your worship service isn't going to have a high degree of spirituality, period.
Yeah, and I think just to wrap up, come back and finish up, and Alan, you set it up pretty well. You know, churches that are intentional, those that have a high standard of excellence with what they do in their service, as well as pursuing intergenerational connectedness, I think is vitally important. And I'd say last thing would be a combination of leadership and spiritual development. Hmm. And within our church experience, to say that we want to help leaders grow, and Morris, you hit the nail on the head, we want to help millennials develop and grow in their personal, unique walk with Jesus Christ. And so I think being able to say, whatever platform God may have given us as leaders, you know, with church, we've got to be intentional with everything we do. We've got to do it excellent for God's honor and glory. We've got to seek to connect generations together and use this community as an opportunity to develop leaders and help people grow in their personal relationship and walk with Jesus.
Excellent.
Now, Ben, you have done this leadership development thing with summer camps all over the North American Division, but in particular at Camp Yavo Pines and just recently at Big Lake, that you helped foster this young adult development. I hear it's called Overflow. Is there a program called Overflow that you could tell us about?
Thank you, Alan, for that springboard. You know, the we've asked a question just real quick, Javier, because I don't want to time crunch, but we asked a question, you know, where are some of the largest pockets of young adults we have in the Seventh-day Adventist Church? Mm-hmm. And we have about 6,000 plus that are working at Adventist summer camps all across North America every single summer.
Right.
And so we looked at the opportunity that provided to say, how could we be a part of that 2 to 3 month journey with a core of, for some camps, over 100 young adults in one place for 2 to 3 months? And what a gift for church leaders to be able to come alongside that core of young adults to lead them into God's word, to provide mentorship and leadership training, to share stories. You know, Alex, we were talking about stories earlier, and just be able to journey through a season of life. And it really is, it's really been a cool journey. You know, there's a number of principles that we've kind of learned through trial and error, with overflow, being developed out of the summer camp setting. But I think it's just to say that, if we are intentional about our walk with Jesus, about developing ourselves as leaders and reaching millennials better, I really believe any church could become a loving environment for young adults. Even if a church has no young adults or millennials in attendance, I think they can understand the generation enough that a young adult that walks through the doors of that church can be loved and engaged. They can get a hug. Hmm. They can be invited to sit at the sacred pew space that we guard very carefully. And also we can have a potluck ready for anybody that comes in the doors. And, you know, one of the saddest stories that I've heard that turned into a triumphant story, good friend of mine floated in the southwestern United States, in and out of Seventh-day Adventist churches as a young adult for 15 years without being engaged. Hmm. And all he was looking for was a conversation, a hug, somebody to say, hey, can we meet up outside of the church hours? And he ended up finding some connection. But I think just that being said, any church that really seeks to be intentional about reaching young adults better, I believe they can do it, and it's a combination of the understanding the research so we can have the language to really have honest conversation, and also pursuing those relationships with millennials ourselves, you know, as church leaders.
So you're willing to share that overflow resource with anyone in the local church that might need help?
Absolutely.
All right. Just checking.
Yeah. I'm going to follow up with that and ask you in just a moment more about overflow. But I did want to mention, kind of trying to tie everything in here as we close. And, you know, Kenneman stated this in one of his in part of one of his research. He says, Barna research shows that young adults who remain involved in a local church beyond their teen years are twice as likely as those who don't have a close personal friendship with an older adult in their faith community, 59% versus 31% among church dropouts. They're also twice as likely to have had a mentor other than a pastor or youth minister, 28% to 11%. And so I think it just adds to a lot of what you were saying, Ben, and everybody else, of course, has been, you know, chiming in. But really the importance, and I guess that's part of the overflow where I was going with that, that overflow seems to help that to engage or at least begin that process of listening to each other, the mentorship process that perhaps can continue, and you could, you know, correct me, but also the importance, and we've mentioned it here, we've sprayed it throughout our conversations, the importance of connecting, but specifically, you see, I think there's, and you guys can tell me what you think as we close with this last question, is there a difference? I mean, connections are absolutely needed. But then there's the aspect of mentoring. You know, you can connect with people and have good conversations, but is there a difference between connecting and actually mentoring, or can both take place at the same time? What are you guys' thoughts as we close with that? Since we were talking about connecting and mentoring, and you mentioned overflow.
This is what I'll suggest to you all. I love Andy Stanley's model. He puts the onus of getting mentors on actual young adults. And I love his premise. He says, listen, if you want to be mentored as a young adult, this is all you need to do, is you say, hey, to an older adult or someone that you would like to be mentored or apprenticed by, hey, would you be willing for a month or two for me to buy you a cup of coffee or to have a light lunch together? And I'm I'm paying as a young adult, but if during that lunch, if you could answer just two or three questions for me, all right? Don't ever call it mentoring. Don't call it apprenticing. Just say that you're offering lunch or a free cup of coffee or a free cup of Postum for those of you that are so inclined. And that way, a young adult can actually glean this wisdom from a person that would get freaked out if they had the pressure of being a mentor, but they're willing to share their story and their wisdom. On the flip side of that, which is really important, here at Younger Generation Church, we've done this kind of as a campaign for the entire church. We believe that with every generation, there's a younger generation coming behind you that can benefit from your wisdom. And so we have this campaign. It's kind of like our own little slogan that we say over and over again. We say, every member a mentor. Every member a mentor. So basically, we've challenged each one of our folks. You don't have to go out and meet people that you don't know and go out and build relationships with strangers, because some of our people, quite honestly, are pretty closed-minded to just the church setting. Start off with just our young people, okay? And if you just share, hey, you know what, I'm really good at basketball, I'll show you how to do free throws, that is the beginning of a relationship that can eventually, and I've seen this over and over again, eventually becomes about spiritual issues. But it doesn't start there. It starts with common interest. It starts with a specialty skill that you have. But if you have it in your culture that every member needs to be a mentor, the communities that Morris is talking about here build themselves organically and naturally. I would say, in addition to Kinnaman's research, we did the research with the Adventist Millennial Study run by the Barna Group. It further endorsed the things that you're finding. And quite, you know, the research says adults other than pastors and youth pastors. You know why? Because pastors are paid to be your friend.
Right, right.
So we're disqualified from these authentic, organic relationships. So as a church pastor, if you make it a part of your culture with your congregation, that there will always be a generation behind you, your teenagers can mentor the junior hires, your young adults can mentor the high schoolers, the married couples in your congregation that have been married for decades have wonderful wisdom they can share with this couple that has just been newly married. And all of a sudden, you have all these wonderful tapestries of relationships between generations and ethnicities and groups forming inside of your church, and it can be a wonderful experience.
And we need to foster, whether it's programs, whether it's buildings, whether it's architecture, everything needs to be done in a way that fosters this. And I'll tell you, for us, we're taking a drastic step, and I'm going to put my plug in here. We're starting a coffee shop, a cafe, here in our town. It's not going to be at our church. And one of the key features of it is there's going to be a coffee bar, where you can literally come in. And, you know, I have some church members that, when I was talking with them about this, they said, you know, after I stopped drinking alcohol, the hardest temptation for me was not to pick up a bottle and drink, but it was to go to the bar so I could sit down and have someone that I could talk real life with. And, you know, so for us, that's one of the things that we're trying to foster, and we're going to have a section of, you know, the restaurant where you can sit down on sofas, and maybe we'll even give a thought question for the day that can get people talking. Just trying to do things. You have to foster that and create the space and the places and just for this to happen.
I love the idea that one of my young adults shared. We've just launched an Adventist Christian Fellowship chapter here at the University of Texas Arlington, and they're going to carry on as our young adult leaders from our church, from YG Church, is going to just be on campus, and they're going to carry around little posters that say, intelligent conversation available here. And just be walking on campus, and they've just, because they've been mentored by Ron Pickell and Adventist Christian Fellowship that's sponsored by North American Division, they got a couple of these ideas, and they said, intelligent conversation available here, and they're just going to walk on campus, much like they've heard from previous campuses, where a student can come up to this student, one of our ICF leaders, and just have a conversation. Because you would not be able to imagine, just close by each one of your local churches are community colleges and public universities where students from not only here but also abroad don't have conversations. They just go to class, they leave class, they go to their dorm room, they're freaked out by being first year or second year in this gigantic tens of thousands of students, and my students are just so excited, they're going to go on campus and foster conversation. What a powerful way to do what Morse is doing in his small groups, to do what's happening at your potluck cliques, to what's going to happen in the coffee houses, and what happens in regards to the bonding at those summer camps with those young adult leaders. Why does that community have to stop when we leave summer camp or when we leave the young adult years? It can continue on if our churches had the culture that members of our church are not just pew sitters. Every member is a mentor.
Amen.
Yeah, well, I think that, picking back off, Alex, what you were saying, I fully agree with you that, you know, one of the most crucial needs is just building cultures where organically mentoring relationships can develop. And I think, you know, part of that, we've tried, when I was in the Pacific Union, we've tried to foster that. Last couple of years, we've run some at local churches, full one-day conferences, 100% about mentoring. And I think sometimes we have more seasoned leaders that could be such great assets to a younger generation, but sometimes they forget the people that they were carried through life by when they were younger. I think everybody, even on this podcast, would recognize that we rode on the shoulders of a giant, or we would not be on this podcast. Anybody want to say amen to that?
Yeah, amen.
Somebody took us under their wing. Somebody took us to Taco Bell, Chipotle, wherever. But somebody poured life into us. And I think when we can, remember that and remember the impact that made, I think we're a lot more open to saying how it's not that I need to, it's that I must invest in the generation that's coming. And if somebody did it for me, I have to do it for somebody else. And if I can, I'll just share this one last thing. The way I like to describe mentorship, it's deeper withing. And you are choosing to do life deeper with a small number of people. Mm-hmm. And I love what I think maybe Alex or Alan had said. You know, as maybe seasoned leaders, we don't dare walk up to a millennial and say, I will mentor you. It's going to backfire. It's not going to work well.
Yes.
But I think we can be available and we can have a culture where seasoned leaders are ready if somebody comes up to them and says, hey, would you be willing to spend some time with me in my life? And so I think we have a dual opportunity to educate seasoned leaders on mentoring, because we've all had it done to us, but we don't often have the language to really know what it is because we've forgotten. So educating seasoned church members, and then I love what Alex you're doing and Morris. I mean, major thumbs up. Whether it's small groups or coffee shops, let's build opportunities, crossroads where these relationships can happen organically. But let's have season ready that if they're approached by somebody that wants to invite them into a deeper withing relationship, they're ready for it. So we can't force them, but we can build the opportunities and we can train leaders. So if they're approached, they're going to be ready.
Well, I think, Ben, I think you have done an amazing job at just leading us into this great summary. And really, and I really appreciate each and every one of you, what you guys have said. And I've been thinking, do I need to really edit anything here? Because even the funny parts that we had in here and the fun parts, I think it's worth everybody listening to everything that we have been saying here. Because we're working, and I'm so glad you guys were on, because, and I appreciate the time you guys have taken, because you guys are in the midst of it. You guys are in the trenches. You guys are working it in your own different ways. And I really hope that this, and I really believe that this podcast is going to be a catalyst and a place where people can listen. They can be challenged, pastors, leaders, whoever it may be. And, you know, Andy Stanley, you mentioned him, you know, Alan, he often says that pastors and leaders, they're basically environment creators in one shape, form, or another. And that is in part what we do, whatever level, whatever organization we are. The leaders create the environment, whether it's going to produce whatever it is that organization produces at a better level, higher level, stronger level. And I think as pastors and leaders, we too, obviously, are environment. We create the environment, I think Benny Osha mentioned it, in which people can feel comfortable. And again, and I praise the Lord the way God is working in each one of you guys' lives and what he's, you know, doing. I know you guys all in different ways and went to school with Ben. And, you know, Ben, I'm going to, you know, side shift here as we close. I always like to try to finish with a fun aspect here at the end, that we've had fun as we've been discussing a serious topic, a very engaging topic. But I still remember Ben playing softball with Ben. I was playing against him. And every time Ben went to bat, it was concerning, because this guy, if you guys have ever seen Ben, he's a big guy. And he can just smash that ball when he hit that ball. Ben, you probably don't even remember. Maybe you do. But anyways, I still remember those, you know, times. I mean, we were in different circles, but nonetheless.
I'm retired half a year.
You're retired. So am I, to an extent, but I still love, you know, baseball. But anyways, I praise the Lord. I never would have, you know, thought, I mean, again, we were in different circles, but I praise God the way that Ben, that God has led you, and the way in what you're doing to reach this incredible generation for God. And so I really want to empower you, encourage you on that. Alan, you have been a mentor in your own way. And so I appreciate what you're doing, to see your passion. What you're doing, is very, people can't see what I'm seeing when you begin to talk, but I know that they can see it in your tone, your passion for young people. And Alex and, you know, Morris, we've had, you know, conversation. Alex, since I first met you, I never told you, but I know that God was going to lead you to do great things, and I already see that. And so continue doing it. And Morris, you and I, of course, have a strong relationship, and I praise God for what he's doing in your life there in Miami Temple. May God continue to use each and every one of you guys. And as we close, please tell us one quick, fun question. What is your favorite food that you're going to have right now? We're recording this in the evening. And so this evening, what are you going to eat? Alan, go.
I'm going to eat whatever Javier buys for me for supper.
I'm going to have to send you a gift card to Chipotle. There you go.
I could go with Cuban, man. I could go with Cuban.
Okay. Well, we can do Cuban, but you have to come back to Florida, and you can personally come to my house. How's that? Okay. But what are you going to eat tonight?
Oh, I'm probably going to eat some Thai food if I can get my hands on it.
Right. Ooh, that's awesome. Ben, what are you going to eat tonight?
Yeah, I was going to echo same thing as Alan. Thai is my number one. So, you know, here in Portland, we got the whole food cart culture.
Yes.
So if we can scrounge about $6 to $10 together, we'll maybe hit up a food cart and get some Thai food tonight. But, yeah, the green curry, it owns me. That's my favorite.
I like Penang, but that's all right. Morris, Miami, bunch of places to eat. What are you going to eat tonight? I've asked you this before, but.
Out of all the places to eat in Miami, my favorite place is my home. And tonight my wife will make arroz con pollo, but veggie style, with lentils. So.
Now, by the way, I think Morris, I'm going to, before we close, you know, Morris needs to say that, because Morris just got married less than a month ago.
Oh, congratulations, Morris.
Thanks, man. So that's a good answer, Morris. That's a good answer. Alex, what are you eating tonight?
Same thing I eat every night, milk.
What's that?
Milk and cereal.
Milk and cereal, okay. What kind of cereal?
You know, it's been BOGO Bonanza at Publix and Winn-Dixie, so right now I've got Captain Crunch, shredded wheat, cookie, crisps, and a bunch of other stuff, so I don't know yet.
Wow, okay. So you have a variety of cereal. Okay, man. All right, cereal it is then. Well, again, thank you guys. And as we close, please let us know where people can get a hold of you. Email. If you want to hand out your phone number, you go ahead and do that. I suggest probably that's not the best thing, but Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatever you want to hand out. And for Ben, how also can we get more information on Overflow? And so let me start with you know, you.
Sure. What a great resource on Facebook is the North American Division Young Adult Ministry Advisory. Alan, is that correct? The title? Yeah. But it's got about, I think, 2,000 to 3,000 young adult leaders, professionals. But I'll go ahead and post a couple links to the Overflow video series on the NAD Young Adult Ministry Advisory Facebook group.
anybody can join, and it's a great place for professionals like Alan, Javier, different folks posting resources, links, articles, all about loving young adults better. So I'll post the overflow links on that page.
Okay, we'll put it on the show notes too, right there on iTunes. And so, but it's FACE, NAD Advisory, Young Adult Advisory, correct?
Yep. North America, yeah, NAD, Young Adult Ministry Advisory.
Okay. And where can people get a hold of you if they want to ask you questions, invite you to talk, speak, whatever it may be? Where can they get a hold of you, Ben?
Just, you know, either a Facebook message, Instagram, Twitter, or you can send me an email at BenjaminLundquist@yahoo.com.
Okay. And that's LundQuist, correct? All right. Alan, how can people get a hold of you or any resources that you'd like to give as we close?
Hey, well, this is our commitment here. We are doing everything open source. So anything that we're doing, anything that we have, we want to share it with you for the sake of expanding the kingdom. So here at Younger Generation Church, you can check out our website at ygchurch.com. That's Younger Generation Church, ygchurch.com. I've actually put together a leadership website that kind of shares all of the different tools and resources that we've tried out. And so you can certainly try it out. You can check that out at university.ygchurch.com, university.ygchurch.com. And then finally, I'm happy to be of any support I can to you in your endeavors to deepen the devotion of next generations to Jesus. So my email address is amartin@ygchurch.com.
Great. Thank you, Alan, so much. Alex, what about you?
All right. Yeah, you can find me on Facebook, facebook.com/avoigt, V-O-I-G-T.
All right.
Just put it in the show notes, and yeah, we'll put it there.
Thank you. Morris?
Yeah, you can email me at Thompson with a P, Morris2R0@gmail.com, or you can find me on Facebook, Morris Thompson. You know, and just contact me through there.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much. God bless you. And again, thank you for your time.
I truly hope this conversation you just listened to will perhaps encourage you to either establish or reestablish your commitment to be intentional in reaching and empowering this younger generation. Maybe right now, if you are not a millennial young adult, you can reach out to one, invite them to lunch, coffee, whatever it may be, and just listen to their story, their dreams, and their desires of what they would like to do in life. And at the same time, if you're a millennial listening, you can do the same thing with someone a bit older who you can learn from and share your story with them as well. I want to thank all of my guests today for sharing their heart and wisdom. So make sure you check out the links and book we mentioned on the show notes. As always, if you have any questions regarding this episode or any other episode, or questions about next year's Restore Conference, please feel free to reach me at Javier, that's javier.diaz@floridaconference.com, or on Twitter. My Twitter handle is javid21, javid21. Please make sure to continue to share this podcast and subscribe. Until next time, God bless you all.
Thank you for listening to this Restore podcast. We hope you've been blessed. Don't forget to subscribe so you won't miss any of our inspiring episodes.